We are charging hard into the end of another week. We've got some fresh CFAP information coming your way. We're going to get our first look at what a Biden administration farm policy might look like. And what the heck? If we're asking big questions, we might as well go right to the top of the egg, guys, for the answers, right?
Live from Agformation Central via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we're loaded up as we begin with USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue, then it's former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack, then it's an abbreviated Friday free-for-all with panelists Jim Wiesmeyer and Pam Johnson, and right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Davis, first, I want to start by acknowledging your wordplay there.
You like that? Agformation Central.
Yeah. Uh-huh. How are you, buddy? What a show!
Super great. Super great. I can't believe it. I don't know how we're going to fit it all in. We just have the 1 hour today. Is that it?
Yeah, that's right. Man. That's right. Okay. It's the standard time. I mean, we lobbied for a little bit more this morning, but believe it or not, they just don't make those kinds of changes on the fly. I don't understand. I don't understand.
Well, that's not my rule, but okay. Yeah.
We've already had the conversation with USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue. It's the only way that we could make it work this morning. So we laid that down. We've got it recorded. It's coming your way in the next segment. There's some very important information in that, okay? If you know a cattle guy, make a phone call. Make sure that they're listening. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave it at that,
okay.
And we will cover more. Then at the bottom of the hour, Secretary Vilsack is going to join in on the free-for-all because Pam will be on the line. Jim Wiesmeyer is going to be on the line. Haney is on vacation this week. But we'll have Pam and Jim in on the conversation with former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. It's going to be that first look at what a Biden farm policy might look like if he and Kamala Harris are successful in the November election. Okay?
All right.
I mean, what a way to go into the end of the weekend, dude. This is some good stuff. All right, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, despite rapidly rising tensions between the United States and China, Trump administration officials say the Phase One trade deal remains on track. White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow, of course, said China, quote, is now really picking their imports of our commodities, which is a great boon, by the way, for the U.S. agriculture and farm sector. While the time and date have not yet been released, U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer and Chinese Vice Premier Liu He are expected to meet via video conference to conduct the first semi-annual review of the accord's implementation. And this is a scheduled review, so I'm anxious to see what the two of them come up with, actually.
Yeah, USTR Lighthizer talked about that when he was on AgriTalk a few weeks ago, that he was going to be having the conversation with his counterpart in China just to do a review. You know, and speaking of all of this demand that has happened, 8 consecutive business days in a row with a bean sale announced to China. This morning, 126,000 metric tons of beans to China for new crop delivery.
Well, Chip, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say a recent study finds that symptoms of anxiety disorders, depressive disorders, substance abuse, and suicidal thoughts have risen in the second quarter of 2020 compared to the same time last year. Over 40% of respondents said in June they have observed adverse mental and behavioral effects in response to the pandemic. Localities have reported spikes in drug overdoses or suicide deaths during the pandemic. And many experts have warned that the nature of the pandemic could worsen overall mental health. And Chip, I bring it up because this has been a focus of ours. If you need some help, hey, check in on your buddies. Get some help if you need it. Chip.
Oh, absolutely. It's... The isolation that some are feeling is unbearable in many cases, and they're looking for relief. Be that conversation for your friends, for your neighbors. Just give them an outlet.
Yep.
Well, President Donald Trump has brokered a peace agreement between the United Arab Emirates and Israel, dubbed the Abraham Accord. The pact would normalize relations between the UAE and Israel, and under the deal, Israel vowed to set aside claims of sovereignty over portions of the West Bank and would halt annexation activities. Trump called the deal a, quote, huge breakthrough. Palestinian officials railed against the pact, calling it a, quote, betrayal of Jerusalem, Al-Aqsa, and the Palestinian cause. We don't talk about Middle East issues all that much, but this one seems significant, Chip.
It certainly does. I hope there's time at the end of the show to get some reaction from Jim Wiesmeyer on what this might mean.
The U.S. Senate has taken recess until after Labor Day, this without having accomplished compromise with congressional Democrats on the next round of coronavirus aid. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said a session could be called during recess if negotiations show signs of revival, saying, quote, the American people need more help. Coronavirus is not finished with our country, so Congress cannot be finished helping our people. Interesting comments there. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I asked Secretary Perdue what happens if there is no second, or if there isn't another. I shouldn't say second. You can't limit it to second. There's already been three. If there isn't another coronavirus aid package out there for the American people, what does that mean for farm revenue in 2020? You've got some interesting comments on that.
Well, Vice President Mike Pence quickly visited Iowa in a campaign swing yesterday. Pence reportedly visited with a number of farmers regarding the recent derecho devastation in the state. Iowa corn and soybean farmers and biofuels producers delivered a letter to Pence demanding the Trump administration make decisions to protect the renewable fuel standard before the election. And also in campaign news, reports say the Biden camp reported receiving $1 million per hour in the 48 hours following the announcement of running mate Kamala Harris.
Yeah. Chip. Yeah, yeah, definitely. The coffers are getting filled for the Biden campaign now.
A little excitement there, yeah.
No doubt. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thanks, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Shaik, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. How you doing, Jennifer?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing just fine, just fine. We're always working to keep the rodents out of the hog house, Jennifer. What do you got on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've been visiting with some folks about rodent control because it is that topic. Nobody wants to talk about it, but everybody has to deal with it. Yep. And little did I realize that COVID-19 and the 2020 weather conditions have just been a perfect storm to have quite an increase of rodents out there. So we put out a story in Farm Journal's Pork this week, and we'll have one coming out next week about things that you can do to keep the rodent control going on your farm. And I think it also applies to our farmhouses and kind of everywhere, just to keep them out.
Yeah, well, speaking from someone that lives in the middle of the timber, I'm going to be very interested in this article, Jennifer, because we're always battling trying to keep the rodents out too. Tell us, how's the show circuit going for you?
It's been great. We had a pretty fun week this week. My kids showed at the Illinois Junior Livestock Classic, and we took home champion gilt, and we also got champion market doe for our first-year goat project. So it was a pretty exciting day. And
I didn't realize the Shikes right were into the goats.
Well, yeah, we just barely. But it's been fun. It's kept them busy.
Good deal. Good deal. Jennifer, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, thanks. Bye-bye.
You bet. You bet. You got to check out that article. Porkbusiness.com will get you to it. Okay. When we come back, conversation with USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue coming your way. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Pioneer. For the best agronomic advice for your farm, count on your local Pioneer team for year-round advice. Pioneer, an American seed brand since 1926.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory, and we have a very special guest with us right now, USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue. Secretary Perdue, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Glad to be with you, Chip. Good to talk with you again.
Mr. Secretary, the CFAP payments, the payouts right now total about $7 billion, $16 billion available. Very recently, crawfish, liquid egg production were added to the long list of the crops or the produce that are eligible for the CFAP payments. Deadline for the sign-up pushed back to September 11. You've got funds available to producers, but the money seems to be moving slowly. What needs to change?
Well, again, it's dependent on applications. The money is rolling to the people who come in and applied. I agree with you that it seems to be moving rather slowly, but these are applications at farm service agencies. Now, as you noticed, and we've added additional commodities there. Many of the growers of these commodities, especially crops, aren't familiar with FSA. We've tried to reach out to them best we can and give webinars and other things of how to connect and how to take advantage of this program. But I've been a little surprised that the money has been as slow as it has been going out. There are no barriers, but it's not back up in FSA offices. It's a matter of applications.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a steep learning curve on it for producers that have never dealt with a program crop, correct?
That is. That's certainly right. But the fact is that if you're familiar with our FSA people in our offices, they're friendly people, and they'll help farmers of all kinds to get signed up. So I think it's just the intimidation factor that people have never done that before. But we hope all those people who are not regular customers of the Farm Service Agency will find the local one. The best way they can do that, Chip, is really to go to farmers.gov at USDA, okay. Farmers.gov. There's a lot of beginning information there, and then they're going to find people in this farm business to be very helpful if they call.
You know, the cattlemen sure figured it out quickly, though, didn't they? More than $3 billion of the $7 billion in payments out to the cattle industry.
They did, and the good news is we're working on really the second tranche of CFAP 2. You know, what we heard from the cattlemen was this cutoff date of April 15th. There was no doubt a cliff there, but that first CFAP program covered the first quarter of the year, really kind of ending on April 15th, and that's what we could determine the damages at that point. But this will even out going forward when we'll release those rules probably the end of this month, the 1st of September, and sign up will begin early in that part of September. So I think your cattle people that felt a little bit unfair on the pre-April versus the post-April 15th date will see that rectified.
Okay, so the cattle guys need to pay attention to the changes that are the updates that are coming because there's potential for another payment there, correct?
Really all livestock, both pork and okay. And cattle, but the cattle in particular, because there was a pretty good cliff on the payment.
Yeah.
If you sold prior to April 15th or after April 15th, but that's going to be smoothed out, as well as that 20% holdback is going to be available as well.
Oh, okay. Okay. Very good. Very good. Yeah. What with the money that is still available in the CFAP program, what about expanding some of the payment limits, especially for the livestock guys? Throw dairy producers in there too, because some of those losses were catastrophic when you look at the hog producers that have had to euthanize some hogs and market ready hogs, et cetera. Any chance of expanding the payment limit?
I don't know about payment limits right now. That's frankly a good question, though, however, depending on how we come out with this. But there's been a lot of discussion, certainly in this legislation they're considering right now, mm-hmm. over the animals were euthanized. And as you well know, a lot of dairy, cattle, pork, and really some specialty crops run into to the payment limits issue. And if we determine that's the biggest factor, then I would need to go back to Congress and explain to them where we think the barriers are and hopefully get some relief that way.
Secretary Perdue, I got to ask this question. Was this on your radar when you took this job, you know, having to navigate one of the largest departments in government through a pandemic while you construct, implement, deliver these huge aid packages to did you ever think this would be part of your job?
No, I did not at all. In fact, not just this pandemic, not just the meat processing crisis, not just the damaged agriculture in general, but this is coming, Chip, on the really two disasters, two WIP programs, and frankly, two market facilitation programs as well.
Right.
So I want to give a shout out to all of our FSA people in the counties and all across this country for the great job they've done. We have laid a lot on them in the last three years. They've been amazing stalwarts in getting money out the door, getting these programs, and standing up very quickly. This Farmers to Family Food Box, that's a program that usually takes 12 to 18 months to design and implement. These guys at USDA had it in less than 3 weeks, and it took out, produce that was being plowed under, animals being euthanized, milk being dumped, and delivered it to the people that needed it. So they need a real shout out. I'm proud of those folks, and
good stuff.
I know most farmers appreciate the local hardworking people at the FSA offices, but I want them to know I do too.
Absolutely. Will, in the next round of assistance, is there going to be assistance for the biofuel producers, the ethanol, maybe even the textile industry?
Yeah, there have certainly been requests, obviously, from biofuels, textiles, and really lumber primarily in the processing area. This has been some of the discussion in the latest thing. We don't have the authority under any of the current regulations right now to deal with that, but that has been a discussion that's being debated. If Congress can come together on a program, hopefully that will be included. Right now, it's just not available. We're trying to address some of the biofuel issues, maybe with some more of this money to get pumps available for more E15 and E15 plus out across the country as well to build a better demand.
Okay. Well, as long as we're talking about ethanol, I want to jump over to the waivers, those gap year waiver requests.
Yeah.
What's your message to EPA Administrator Wheeler on that?
Well, Andrew Wheeler knows very well where we are on this, and we've been advocating all along. This is a non-starter, and I think they understand, frankly, I can't reveal personal conversations, but I think they fully understand, based on this Tenth Circuit decision, I don't know how in the world they could go that way. Now, whether or not they're willing to make that determination prior to the election or not, I cannot foresee. I think it would just fly in the face in contempt of the court order in the Tenth Circuit. So I think there's a legal backstop, and I don't believe EPA wants to be embarrassed by being held in contempt of what the Tenth Circuit decision is.
Right. Okay. Secretary Perdue, what if Congress does not get its act together? We don't have another coronavirus aid package. Could there still be another program to add to 2020 crop revenue?
Well, there could be. Obviously, I think President has shown over the last 3 years that he's absolutely willing to support our agricultural sector wholeheartedly. And he was the one when the trade issues and the retaliation from China and others came, said, bring me a, they're not going to use weaponize our farmers in order to make a difference. So you do that. He did that one time, did it last year, $16 billion, $12 billion, and now another $16 billion program. So I think the answer is yes, we're going to do what it takes. Certainly Congress has the purse strings, and they need to be cooperative. But I think most people in Congress, certainly those who have agricultural districts, know that there may be some additional needs out there. And that's what we've been documenting for them.
Literally 15 seconds for this. Can we fix some of the problems by lifting the Section 232 tariffs on China?
Actually, China purchases over the last month have been extraordinary. Record corn purchases. I was just looking at some numbers before we got on the phone. We're exceeding some 2017 numbers now in that. Whether they make that, they're going to have to continue humping it. 2 million bushels of metric tons of soybeans is a pretty large order, but they're definitely showing progress that they They want to try to meet those things. It's pork has slipped back a little bit. Beef had a record year. Poultry record.
Right.
And corn. We ship more corn than we have in years to China. So they're good indications. Whether we're going to hold their feet to the fire. I don't know that relieving that 232 now would increase that anymore. We think it's really right. been sort of the motivation for them to get get their act together.
Okay. Very good. Secretary Perdue, we're out of time. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Chip, always good to talk with you and your listeners. Have a good day.
Very good. That is USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue. We'll be back with the free-for-all in a moment.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, big moves to the upside yesterday in the grain complex. Kind of a rest day. The markets are taking a breath today, huh?
Yeah, a little bit of a pause. Explosive gains the past 2 days in both the corn and soybean markets. So a little bit of a rest ahead of the weekend probably isn't too much of a surprise. It'd be interesting to see how we close today. So mid-morning trade, a little bit of price pressure. But if that pressure builds into the close today, it's probably telling that maybe short-term tops are in place. If we finish high range and maybe with a higher close today, would suggest that maybe we got more upside left near term here. So watch the closes today.
Yeah, very excellent point. So we got those yield estimates out of the way. What are we focused on now?
Well, I think that, the part the market hasn't focused on right now is that if we rally prices too high, it'll choke off demand. And we got pretty aggressive demand, or USDA does, built into its new crop balance sheet on the exports for soybeans. So that's something to watch moving forward. And then obviously weather, late season weather. And then the Pro Farmer Crop Tour next week, obviously results from that will be closely monitored.
Absolutely. Just a reminder to everybody out there that Brian Grady is the leader of the eastern leg of the tour. Jeff Wilson is the leader of the western leg of the tour. I'm going to be working on data next week and hosting the evening meetings. If you haven't signed up for those evening crop tour meetings, just go to profarmer.com. Do it right now. Go to profarmer.com. There's a red banner at the top of the page. Click on that page, and you can get registered for those meetings. And Brian and Jeff will be on AgriTalk next week. Thanks, buddy. Travel safe.
You bet.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by Pivot Bio Proven, predictable, productive, weatherproof. Get a reliable partner. Get the new nitrogen. Get Pivot Bio Proven.
Okay, let's you bet, Miranda. We're going to hit the gas right now and waste no time. Let's bring in Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. Jim, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. I thought Perdue nailed it on a couple of those issues, Jeff. Good interview.
Absolutely. Yep, we're going to talk more about that as the free-for-all goes on. Iowa Farmer, past president of the National Corn Growers Association and Maysall, Pam Johnson. Pam, welcome back to the free-for-all.
Great to be on this morning, Chip. Great show.
Okay. And, of course, Davis Michelson in for Sean Haney. Davis,
standing
are you
by.
Ready, buddy?
Standing by. You betcha. Okay. I'm ready. Let's do it.
Let's bring in a special guest, former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack, who is currently the president and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council. But today he is representing the Biden-Harris team. Secretary Vilsack, welcome back to AgriTalk. It is good to talk with you again.
Great to be with you guys.
All right. So it's such an obvious choice for you to be part of the Biden team in developing the ag policies. There's nobody that's got more experience with Vice President Biden than you when it comes to the ag industry and the ag issues. So let's start with the biofuels and the request by some refiners to go back in time and get exempted from blending requirements as long ago as 2011. What is the message to EPA on those requests?
Can't happen, shouldn't happen, never should have happened in terms of the waivers that have been granted. Decimated production. certainly provided instability for the ethanol industry and for corn farmers who corn producers who basically depend on this industry. A substantial amount of corn that we produce goes into ethanol production, and it creates an opportunity for new job growth in the state of Iowa and in the Midwest. So this is an unfortunate circumstance, and it's cost jobs and it's cost income for farmers. I think we need to go back to a day when we were supporters of the RFS, when the administration was supporters of the RFS, and that we, when given the choice between big oil and American farmers, that we side with American farmers.
The pressure from big oil is sometimes, you know, it's been called insurmountable at times. How do you offset it?
The food and ag industry represents nearly 28% of the American workforce and 20% of the American economy. So I think it's just as significant and more important to the economy, if you will, and to the future of the country, that we focus on American farmers and American agriculture and the food industry and support it any way we can.
Excellent.
That's number one. Number two, big oil doesn't need help. When you give waivers to refineries that are owned and operated by Exxon and Chevron, I mean, these are multi-billion dollar corporations. They don't need assistance and help. But the American farmer who's struggling right now absolutely needs help. And the ethanol industry that is struggling right now absolutely needs help. Okay. That's why it's unconscionable to me that when we put together coronavirus stimulus packages, we're looking for ways to help big oil. But we've not had an opportunity to provide any assistance to ethanol production and ethanol producers. It seems that we've got it backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of EPA, there's some concern in farm country that a Biden administration might mean more rules, more regulations for farms that are enforced by EPA. How do you address those concerns?
Well, I will tell you that the focus of in my discussions with the vice president is on how we can create new income sources, not new barriers. The vice president is very committed to working with American agriculture in, I think, a bold new future for American agriculture by focusing on its ability and capacity to help the country deal with climate. He set as a goal American agriculture to be the first net zero agriculture in the world. That's going to create new income sources, environmental markets, new investments in conservation, methane capture and reuse, a new income opportunity in that respect, and also converting agricultural waste into a variety of new materials, creating jobs in rural areas and new commodities, if you will, for American agriculture. So I think, the concern about the EPA, fully understand that, but I think at the end of the day, what we really need is an opportunity to see more farm income, and we can do that in a variety of ways. Stronger trade agreements, obviously, support for the renewable fuel industry, obviously, those are traditional ways. But I think we also have to have new ways and additional ways, and the vice president is very keen on that.
Very good. Very good. Jim Wiesmeyer, jump in.
Well, what you just heard is why Secretary Vilsack was so popular when
exactly.
he was in.
That's
I think
what
you
I was
hit
thinking.
The marks. I think you hit the mark, Secretary. My one question relative to the elections, you were one of the first ones to really press on expanding the Democratic foothold, widening the tent, if you will, for Democratic lawmakers to get more of them. Do you think you've made progress? And wouldn't just a couple of percentage points in some key states make a big difference for you?
Absolutely, no question about that. And I think progress has been made in the sense that Democratic candidates who ran for president and other candidates who are running for higher office are spending time in small towns, visiting with farmers, understanding the challenges and the dilemmas that American farm families face today, and are developing very robust plans. In the past, Democratic candidates would come to rural places and talk about the expansion of broadband, and certainly they're still talking about that. But they're also talking about investments in transportation, lock and dam systems. They now recognize that our internal waterway systems are very critical to creating an export advantage that we currently have in the U.S. And so investing in that aging infrastructure becomes critically important. They can now talk about the necessity of investing in a new generation of farmers by having a strong, robust commitment to beginning farmer programs. So it's beginning to have a sense, and 1 or 2 points does make a difference. If you lose a rural county and many rural counties by 80-20, you're not, I don't care what you do in the suburbs or urban centers, you're going to have a tough time winning states. But if you get it down to 60-40, 70-30, or 55-45, or occasionally win one of those counties, that makes a big difference. And I think Democrats need to understand that. And I think we need to have a message that resonates with rural folks. And in this particular circumstance, with the pandemic, with the farm economy, with increased bankruptcies, with exports, you know, here's something we need to focus on. This is amazing. You know, when I was secretary, we had a record amount of agricultural surplus, export surplus. We sold more to the world than they sold to us by quite a wide margin. Today, we risk for the first time in 60 years not having an ag surplus in trade. Right.
It's true.
And that makes a big difference. It makes a big difference, and ultimately in the bottom line for farmers.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, Secretary Vilsack, trade issues. I want to talk about this. A couple of questions here on it. Would we turn back time and restart TPP discussions of a Biden administration? And your current job, it puts you in a very unique position. Does it also make you a candidate for U.S. trade rep?
Oh, my. You know, that trade representative job is a really, really hard, complicated, detailed job. And I kind of understand it at 50,000-foot level, but you really have to be on the ground to understand that. So I don't know about that. But in terms of trade agreements, here's I think we need a smarter approach to trade. Not only do we need to take a look at the opportunity to reform a regional trade agreement, but we also have to look at ways in which we approach a China situation differently. You know, the reality is American agriculture paid a heavy price during the trade war because the country made the decision, the administration made the decision to go alone. Didn't have any allies, went to war with no allies, and basically China responded with retaliatory tariffs that were devastating to American agriculture. And the phase one trade agreement's fine if China lives up to the promises. Right now, they're not on track to do that. Tensions are rising between the two countries. And so it's uncertain about the future of that phase one trade agreement. I hope, sincerely hope, that it stays. And I sincerely hope China picks up the pace of purchasing. Nice. But here's something interesting, fellas. You need to think about this. China's really smart about this. What they did by putting the retaliatory tariffs on agricultural products is they built up surpluses in these products. And what did that do? That depressed prices. Mm-hmm. So as they're purchasing more soybeans today, they're purchasing it at a price that would be substantially less than what they would have purchased it a year or two or 3 years ago. So they've essentially built up a surplus and now taking advantage of that surplus with lower prices. So at the end of the day, we've got to approach this. We have to be a lot smarter with reference to China than we've been.
Okay, we've got about a minute and a half left here. I want to bring in Pam Johnson. Pam, question?
My questions have been answered, and I think what I wanted you to do, Secretary Vilsack, was to lay out the alternatives to the Trump policies on trade and on ethanol, which you've done a great job of. And farmers keep asking me, what's the alternative to Trump? There, some of them are ready to look at an alternative, and I think you've laid it out. I think it's important about who a president and who a candidate surrounds themselves with for advisor and also a farmer and rancher team. So I know a minute doesn't give you much time to answer how important that is and how you see that moving forward with a Biden administration.
The vice president learned a great deal as vice president about the reach of the agriculture department. And I'm convinced that whoever he chooses to lead that department, their heart and soul will be rooted with American agriculture and rooted in small town, rural America, because he now understands the capacity of that department to do so much good in rural places. And with an aggressive plan and additional resources, the sky's the limit for rural America.
Secretary Vilsack, we certainly appreciate you making time for us this morning and look forward to more conversations ahead.
Always happy to be with you, fellas. Thanks.
Excellent. We'll be back with more Free for All in a moment.
Register now for your chance to win one of more than 1,000 prizes, including a full-size side-by-side utility vehicle. Go to FarmJournalFieldDays.com for full contest details.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
All right. Welcome back to the free-for-all on this Friday edition of AgriTalk. We've got Pam Johnson, Iowa farmer, Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer policy analyst, and, of course, the handsome news guy, Davis Michelson. Davis, I'm going to go to you first on this. We've had a conversation with USDA Secretary Perdue, former Secretary Vilsack. What's the key takeaways?
Well, on Perdue, you know, you pointed out what an enormous job Secretary Perdue has had, and he's had it a little bit rough given the management style, if you want to call it that, of our current president. Hey, here's what we need to do, Mr. Perdue, make it happen. Whatever that means, here's what you got to make happen. And he's dealt with that well. Flip that over to the Biden camp. I feel like Secretary Vilsack absolutely, totally gets it. Okay. I don't know that a Biden presidency would look a whole lot like a Trump presidency. In other words, here's your thing, make it happen. I think that what we've heard is a Tom Vilsack that gets it. The American people need to hear from Joe Biden. We need to hear these same things coming from Mr. Biden, I think, if he has a chance some of these ag voters. Yep.
Excellent point. Excellent point. Pam, what's your thoughts here?
Yeah. So the Perdue talk, you know, the thing that was reassuring to me was the constant, we've got to get the word to Wheeler, you know, the stand by the 10th Circuit decision, and Secretary Perdue emphasized that. And I think the question is still out there, are we going to hear about these SREs before the election? Then pivoting to Secretary Vilsack, I think that it's time to roll out to rural America and farmers and ranchers what Biden really stands for. I mean, he's been couched as the East Coaster with a West Coast Kamala Harris now. But I think we had a glimpse with Secretary Vilsack about the people who are advising him and what his stance will be for farmers and ranchers to take a look at an alternative and support the renewable fuel standard. They've come out with that in the Rural Action Plan and get back into our place in the world marketplace and trade. So I was encouraged by the things I heard.
Okay. All right. You know, Jim, when Secretary Vilsack was speaking and the points that he was making, I was flashing back to the start of his tenure at USDA and remembering some of the things that I wrote in Pro Farmer Newsletter with your encouragement to write in Pro Farmer Newsletter that were not very flattering of the job that Secretary Vilsack was doing at the time. Fast forward to the end of his time at USDA, and it's like he was a completely different person, administrator, seemed very much on the side of production agriculture by the time he was done.
Absolutely. And I always like when a cabinet member, you know, grows in the job, and he grew at a giant length before he started and when he ended. And what we heard from both Perdue and Vilsack is that they're listening to the ag stakeholders, and they're not ideologues. You know, they're pragmatic people. You don't have that with every cabinet position or White House official. So as Davis said, let's hope that translates to on high. I thought when Vilsack said Biden learned a lot in 8 years of the power of agriculture, his 28-20, you know, workforce versus economy, that's a powerful message, Jeff.
Okay. All right. I got this comment from a listener, texted to me, you guys. Says the secretary, as in Secretary Perdue, did a good job of not answering your 232 tariff question. His non-answer says it all. Removing them isn't an option for this administration at this point, sadly. Jim?
Well, you know, I agreed with the secretary in that China continues to purchase those individual commodities when they need them. Would
Stepping
it be better
up.
Without them? Absolutely.
Right. But right, Pam?
I think the point that Secretary Vilsack made was if we wouldn't have had these retaliatory tariffs, we'd be selling our crops at a much higher price. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is the question about the 232s and the retaliatory. We had a study done by Iowa State and said this administration will not lift them. And until they are lifted, we're not going to move our pork and our ethanol into China like we would have, which to me is like a gut punch.
Yeah, interesting.
Now, Chip, you pointed out, though, you know, your line has always been China is an opportunity buyer. And as long as opportunities, I don't care what the environment is, as long as the opportunities are there and they're viewed favorably by right. China, they're going to step in and be buyers is my thought.
Right, exactly. Now, the fact that they've canceled some pork purchases, I don't know if they're doing it because they think that they're going to be able to step back in and buy it cheaper later. But, you know, in the latest reporting period, they canceled 8,800 metric tons of pork. And that hasn't been that unusual. Jim and I talked about this before the show even started. If they really, really wanted the pork, and they really, really wanted the beans and everything, they would remove the tariffs themselves, the retaliatory tariffs, wouldn't they?
Yes. And on the case of the pork, they have a history now, we'll see in a few weeks here, of canceling pork purchases and coming back with even bigger pork purchases. So I think that's what you're going to see in the weeks ahead, Chip.
Right. Boy, that would be good to see. There's no doubt about that. Pam, what are you thinking for this week? What do we say? Give your message to those that are in the derecho areas.
Oh my God, you know what do you say except that your heart goes out to them, which seems pretty phony because they need action. I hope they get help, and it sounds like communities are rallying around them, but just keep their chins up. I got a lot of friends down there, and it's so sad.
It is. It's incredibly sad, and they need as much help as they can possibly get. We've been talking about this since it was happening on Monday's show in the afternoon. We've been talking about it, and we still can't draw enough attention to the need that exists. Even in Cedar Rapids with all the issues there. You guys, great job today. Thanks, Pam. Thanks, Jim. And thanks, Davis. Davis, we'll talk to you again later. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you. Got to come back this afternoon. Chris Swift from Swift Trading Company. We're talking cattle.